Hey, it's Dr. Jamie, and let's talk about the importance of salt and electrolytes. If you're living the low-carb life like me, your requirements are actually much higher. And there's only one source that we trust in our home, and it's the people and products at Redmond Real Salt. They keep us coming back for more every time. Real Salt's an all-natural, unrefined sea salt harvested from an ancient ocean. It's full of natural minerals that make it healthy, delicious, and pink or red-looking. They're also the best-selling brand in America's health and food stores. Redmond Real Salt is so pure, it's free of pollutants and microplastics found in many other natural refined salts. The Redmond Salt Deposit is in Redmond, Utah, where the team enjoys award-winning work conditions and generous pay. And since they own and control the whole process, you can be sure that Real Salt comes to you through their world-class production facilities in its unrefined, mineral-rich, delicious state, exactly as nature intended. Redmond has amazing natural products, including salt, electrolytes, toothpaste, and so much more. So check out the entire line at www.redmond.life, where you can use my code DRFIT, that's DRFIT, for a discount on all Redmond Real Salt and Relight products. To the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jamie, and welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. It's so wonderful to have you here today. Thanks to everybody that's listened to our previous episodes, you've downloaded, you've loved, left all your reviews. You guys have no idea how much that really helps with our visibility out there in the world. Well, I have an amazing colleague on today's podcast. I've been waiting months to get to record with her, and all of you have been requesting to hear from her. So I know this is going to be an episode that is spread far and wide. Let me introduce her, Dr. Courtney Hunt. She's a fellow OBGYN. She attended the University of California at Berkeley for undergraduate studies and continued her education at Loyola School of Medicine in Chicago. She then went on to do her OBGYN residency at UCLA. Dr. Hunt practiced obstetrics and gynecology for 15 years before stopping obstetrics to pursue her interest in quantum biology, nutrigenetics, and the interaction between our environment and our DNA. Dr. Hunt began investigating the intersection between the physics of light, mitochondria, and DNA to determine the best practices and methods to keep us healthy. She followed her true calling and immense passion to help people who, despite modern medicine, are becoming increasingly sick. Her extensive medical training, surgical experience, and 20 plus years in clinical practice have allowed her to methodically, rationally, and correctly diagnose patients and heal them with a comprehensive approach. She covers all the bases, she's relentless in finding solutions for her patients, and she utilizes modern medicine when needed, but focuses on healing, proactive approach, and that provides long-term solutions without the need for prescription medications. She's a true leader in nutrigenetic medicine, including methylation, MTHFR, hormone replacement, thyroid optimization, and actual reversal of thyroid disease. She understands the quantum mechanics of circadian biology and sunlight to heal our bodies. She believes in getting to the root cause to reverse chronic illness. She has successfully treated thousands of patients with complex chronic issues. Dr. Hunt also understands the importance of the environment, nutrition, and light on fertility. As a society is handing down weaker and weaker DNA to our children from the epigenetic perspective and utilizing the knowledge of nutrigenetics and DNA, she works with parents to prepare their bodies for a healthy baby. I sure can appreciate that. She has successfully treated patients with complex and chronic issues, developed integrative protocols to address a variety of different illnesses, like thyroid, hormone, nutritional genetics, mitochondrial function assessment. She also believes in optimizing human potential for individuals, families, communities, and societies. She has a wonderful book, you guys. We'll share the work that she has done on that. The mission is love, and we can all learn to heal once inflammation has gone one by one. Dr. Hunt, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited that we could make it work. And I felt when you were reading that, like I was on my first day of medical school. I feel like that day is still today. I don't feel like so many years have passed since that happened. So it's interesting.
It's so crazy. Okay. Well, tell us, this is a very interesting pathway, you know, as an OBGYN to be where you are now. Tell us kind of the backstory, how you got here. What inspired you to pursue this?
You know, I look back to when I was a kid and my dad loved Wayne Dyer and all the stuff about you create your reality. I remember when I was little, being 7 or 8 years old, and telling my mom I was going to be a doctor. and visualizing this little blonde girl named Sophia with curly blonde hair. And now I have her. So I was one of the fortunate kids whose parents told them you can create any reality you want. And I always knew I would be a doctor. I always knew I would have my own solo practice so that I could have freedom to do it the way I wanted to do it. And those are just some of the earliest memories that I have. I knew I had an interest in stem cells. So I did a lot of work with, you know, BRCA, even back in the late 90s. And, nutrition. I remember writing papers about that stuff when I was in high school. So it's so funny to me. I think that's why you reading that took me back to that feeling of when I was like, you know, 21 years old, because I look back and I think, oh my gosh, all those things that I thought about when I was 8, 9, 10, 17, 21 have happened. How can that possibly be? And so fast forward at this like midway point in my career, or hopefully not midway, I hope to live to be the ripe old age of 130, but at this midway point at 50, how much of it has come true? And so I went after trying to figure out the science of, okay, how did I make all that come true? How does that work in this? And how is the physics, how does the physics of that work to make it come true? Because if you hand children the knowledge that yes, you create your reality and you can explain the science of that to them, that's some powerful stuff.
Yeah. That's incredible. That's incredible. Okay. So, when you left obstetrics to go study, you know, quantum physics and these types of things, tell me what that was like.
That was 2014. My husband had had refractory celiac that was diagnosed, in 2005, 2006. I've had Hashimoto's. I had had two babies. I was exhausted. And what scared me was my grandmother had died of Lou Gehrig's disease, and I was starting to have weird numbness and tingling in my fingers, and I wasn't able to study the way I used to. So I actually tried to read a layperson's book about hormones just to get a feel for what the population was reading about hormones rather than what the textbooks had taught me. And I was having trouble just tracking that easy book. And I remember having to the months that I had to take my, you know, you do that 6 month board review or 6 year board review where you have to go sit for a test.
Yeah.
I don't think they make you do it anymore, but they did back then. And I was worried
about that.
Yeah. So, I was afraid because I had a photographic memory when I was in college and high school, and I didn't have to study for tests. I could just sit down and be done with the test in 20 or 30 minutes. And all of a sudden I had this, oh no moment. Like I'm reading this material, even simple material in my own field, and I'm not tracking what the page is saying from start to finish. Why am I feeling this way? So I started going to the functional medicine meetings and trying to understand what did I not learn in residency that's out there? Where's the disconnect? What was I not taught? And so obviously at that time, you know, vitamin D was a big deal and hormone replacement was a big deal. And, I had this aha moment when I was on the concourse at A4M at the Venetian, and inside that concourse, it looks like clouds in the sky.
Yeah.
And there was an ophthalmologist talking about methylation and eye disease in just one of the, he wasn't a main speaker, but it was just one of the, you know, the people who sell there, the vendors.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I looked at him and I thought, holy smokes. If that's how much methylation affects the eye and we are building a baby, what have I not been taught? What have I not been taught? Like I was taught the difference between folic acid and folate and MTHFR was a big deal, but I wasn't taught everything this guy was talking about, or if I was, it escaped me. And I literally felt like God parted those clouds in the Venetian, not real clouds, but the light in the Venetian, and said, look at this guy. And so from there, I realized, okay, if I want to fix my brain, I'm going to have to start sleeping, because I had been in solo practice since 2005. That was 2014, 2015. Wow. I'm going to have to start sleeping. I can't do this all night, every night. And so I just started learning about nutrigenetics first. That was the first step.
What was your diet like at that time?
I mean, I ate what my patients tell me is healthy. So lots of fruits and vegetables, whole grains. I never ate what I considered bad. I ate what I was taught in medical school was a healthy diet.
Yeah, you only know what you know.
But about that time, I was also going to some meetings and I was looking at those guys who were keto and thinking, how the heck does that guy who's 55 years old ride a bike for 3 hours a day and have a six pack and I can barely keep my head awake to listen to him talk at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? What's the difference here? And I remember saying to a friend of mine, I had to leave for a delivery or something during one of these meetings. And I said, can you write down everything that man says? Because I want to understand why I think I'm eating healthy and I feel like such crud. And he's already told this whole meeting that he's biked for 3 hours and he's done all this already in one day. What is he doing? So that probably turned me on to keto in like 2016. I knew 2015, 2016 was the timing of that because we were literally at a meeting. You know, you go to these meetings and most of the people, they're kind of half asleep by the afternoon. They're in their afternoon slump. And then there's always that keto group and it's usually men and they're fit. And they're talking about how they can't wait to get back out on their bike. And I started saying, what are they talking about that I don't know about? What is going on here? So that was a big awakening for me, an aha moment of like, oh yeah, maybe I should change the way I eat.
So what was that like? Like, cause you're ketogenic now, obviously. What did you feel like transitioning into ketosis?
How did my body feel?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to do it. And of course, like most doctors, I was like, I'm going to figure this out myself. Mm-hmm. So I would try. And then I would probably, now knowing what I know, I would get dehydrated. I would overwork. I wouldn't have enough electrolytes. I wouldn't have enough salt. I would get a headache and then I would quit. And then I would try again. But because I didn't know all the details and I didn't have anybody teaching me, I was just trying to read about it. I probably tried and failed for 6 months, 8 months. Off and on until I finally was like, oh, and I listened to all the people saying, you can't do this. If you're a woman, you can't do this. If you're hypothyroid, you can't. And finally I was like, I thought they're wrong. I'm just going to push through and figure it out. Yeah. So sometime around 2017, 2018, I just said, okay, that's it. I'm going to push through this keto flu feeling, this afternoon slump and figure out what I'm doing wrong and get into it.
And you were having thyroid issues too, right? At that time.
Yeah. So as a gynecologist, you'll appreciate this. I had lichen sclerosis in my mid-30s. And I tried to treat myself, of course. And then I went to a couple of specialists in that area in my town that I was friends with. And they did the biopsies and they treated me appropriately. But that was for me probably the initial sign of what I then attributed to Hashimoto's, but it was probably just the metabolic disturbance from too many carbohydrates and not enough sunshine and not enough sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. Okay. So as your book starts out with fertilization, can you start to make the connection for us with sunlight, ketosis, mitochondria? Can you start to make some of those connections for us about why we were probably programmed this way from the beginning?
Well, that's a big thing to tie in.
Start talking about fertilization for us and let's maybe teach people just a little bit about how that works and why this is such an, cause I'm super passionate about this for the same reason, because I feel like the work that you and I are doing has the ability to impact generations to come, not just the individual patient, you know, sitting across from us when we're talking about people who are
making in life. So the first piece is evolution. We evolved using mitochondria to power DNA. So we have a power plant and we have a genetic code. We evolved over millions of years on this planet and all of the instructions for the mitochondria to know what they are supposed to do come from the sun. So they either come from the sun in the form of food or electrons from food, which is what the mitochondria read, or the mitochondria are burning oxygen. Or they're taking instructions about when to send what information to the DNA in terms of time of day. So our three main mitochondrial inputs, barring poisons and pesticides and antibiotics and things that can damage them, are light. Is it day or is it night? Oxygen, which comes from plants that use photosynthesis from the sun to make the oxygen. And the food, which is either plants or animals. So all of those instructions are codified that way because we evolved on this planet 365 days a year, night, day, taking those instructions to tell our DNA how to keep us healthy. And we've lost regulation of that. We've lost regulation of day and night. We've lost regulation of 365 days a year, meaning in the winter, the animals fast, but we don't fast. We have Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Martin Luther King, ski weekend, Valentine's Day.
And my birthday.
Your birthday, right? So we have lost touch with that. So at fertilization, when the sperm with its 25 or 50 to 75 mitochondria hit the egg with 600,000 mitochondria, there's a massive, massive, massive jumpstart. Some energy transfer is happening. And we discovered that in mice in 2011. And then we rediscovered it in humans in 2016 at Northwestern. So that part of the embryo's life or the zygote's life is holy. We can't, we in this country, we don't allow experimentation on it. So it took figuring it out in another animal to see that, oh my gosh, there is an explosion of 20 billion zinc atoms coming out of that one egg when the sperm hits the egg. Those 20 billion zinc atoms explode out, and those scientists use a fluorescent tag to watch it happen. So what they see when the sperm hits the egg is that there are 250 mile an hour calcium atoms released that trigger this zinc to explode out of the egg. So if you go look at the video, you can just look up Dr. Thomas O'Halloran on YouTube and you can see the videos. That egg is tagged with a fluorescent dye, and that's why it looks like light. So it's not actually light that you can see it. We've modified it so that we can see it. And that is seen in a human zygote. So when that happens, there are then breaks immediately released on the DNA so that the combination of the father's DNA and the mother's DNA together can start taking over and ramping up. There's a process called demethylation that happens where that's what I call the post-its on the DNA or the epigenetics of the parents are kind of erased. So the baby gets a fresh start. And then the zygote grows into multiple cells, travels down the tube, implants into the uterus, grows in the uterus, becomes a baby and comes out. So if that is the moment where we are, I haven't even gotten into the physics of that, but if that is the moment where we are fresh, where we are the closest to the other side, God, the singularity, there's a lot of words that I use for it. That's when we're the cleanest. And we as a zygote, an embryo and a fetus use autophagy and apoptosis to keep ourselves rolling, to keep ourselves clean. We're growing out of control. There has to be some mechanism to make that embryo or fetus not get cancer. And the same mechanism that makes the embryo or fetus with that massive growth not get cancer can actually send signals into the mother's body to control the mother from getting cancer. So that's the magical time in a human life or a human experience where we need to be focusing our energy on number one, cleaning up the DNA of the egg and the sperm before the baby's even made. And then number two, taking cues from to figure out we have an 8 billion person population that just got wiped out from a virus that we shouldn't have had to suffer from the way we did. If we all understood, okay, we come from mitochondria, we come from DNA, let's take care of those two things. We don't have to get so sick. We don't have to live a life of autoimmune disease and chronic fatigue and all of these things. So if we can take cues from the zygote and the embryo and the fetus, we can learn how to reverse engineer that as adults to fix ourselves.
Incredible. So after fertilization, now the woman's pregnant, what are the implications of sunlight exposure and diet while she's pregnant on this growing fetus?
Everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you were taught it. I wasn't taught it. I was barely taught any of it. It's everything. You are fast and furious taking one multipotential stem cell, which means one egg fertilized by a sperm that has the ability to become every single cell in the human body by modulating, basically packaging and unpackaging that DNA over and over and over and over. And those cells divide and they get their signals and they decide if they're going to become hair. If they decide if they're going to become brain, they decide if they're going to become fingers. They decide if they're going to become little baby toes and a heart. And they're doing that with the nutrition that we put in. So the first step is understanding, okay, it's not about a healthy diet. It's about maximizing energy production in the mitochondria. And again, that's done. There's a metabolic switch that happens, which I know you teach a lot of ketosis. There's a metabolic switch. You can increase your ATP production fourfold to grow that baby. And this is a very sensitive topic, as you know, because I don't like to put out there on social media, oh, just do ketosis when you're pregnant, because people make mistakes and you don't want to make mistakes when you're pregnant and have women get sick or hurt their child. So I just want to say the disclaimer, this is not medical advice. If you're considering embarking on this, make sure you have a really qualified professional to take you down this path. But that zygote is in a ketogenic state. For the first 3 or 4 days, it's not even implanted. It has no nutrition being supplied to it. It's eating itself.
Yep.
Until 11 weeks, there's really not even a cord to give it nutrition from the mother. It's just existing in that fluff of endometrial tissue, right? It's just existing in the fluff of the uterus. It's not connected. So I think just to take it slowly for people, that those are the mechanisms. Autophagy is the mechanism that the zygote is using and the embryo is using and the fetus is using to keep its direction pointed forward in check to grow and grow and grow and not grow cancer. So what you put into your body matters, but not in the way that some of the health gurus tell you. Because if you load yourself with heavy metals and pesticides during that time, you're going to do more harm than good. And the heavy metals and the pesticides are in the plants. They're in the vegetables. So as counterintuitive as that seems, your natural mechanism for that, which has been taught to us by every religion around the world, but seems to have been forgotten, is if you're going to take in the plants, you have to practice a period of ketosis or fasting to clean them. And again, I'm not suggesting that all the pregnant moms listening to us just jump on board and do this, because you, if you don't know what you're doing, you can hurt yourself. But or make yourself feel really bad and hurt your baby. But those are the mechanisms involved. So I think if humanity just starts to wake up and realize, oh, I wasn't taught that as a child, I need to at least start understanding how my body works, how this process works, because I evolved using mitochondria and light and food in that period of hunting, fasting, refeeding, which is what we evolved doing. Maybe I could learn to clean my DNA before I make the baby.
Yeah, it's so important. It's so important to think about it prior to conception. And it's very rare these days that we see people for preconception visits. And let's be real, in traditional medicine, you know, we've got 10, 15, 30 minutes at most, and you're trying to teach people all these important things. And really what you're looking for is like, okay, I want to make sure you don't have high blood pressure or diabetes, or which all these things affect, right? Their diet and sunlight and all of this. But it's a scary world, because it takes a lot more than 10 or 15 minutes to.
Right. And you came out of residency ways. You finished closer, or I'm assuming you finished residency relatively recently compared to me. Were you taught this stuff in residency? I wasn't.
No, I was taught very little, so much that I had a 1-hour glucose tolerance test with my second baby over 200, come from a long family history of normal BMI diabetics. So like genetic programming from the beginning for insulin resistance. And then, you know, was a total carb addict, but I had a nutrition degree, but in medical school, I was literally counting like goldfish crackers. I'm like, okay, well, yes, just keep the calories in check. And then I go into my pregnancies and I mean, I'm eating chocolate pudding from the cafeteria. I mean, you know what it's like to be a resident. It's like, you know, I'm just trying to survive. My husband was a police officer working nights. I mean, I just knew what I knew, but I mean, all I learned was the, you know, different developmental weeks of organogenesis and, you know, what preeclampsia was and how to diagnose gestational diabetes. And then you just send them to the diabetes educator, you know.
And the diabetes educator tells them to eat 250 grams of carbs. And you're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then after my first daughter was born, I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism, but I failed all my glucose testing. And then I was eventually found out I was pre-diabetic. And so I just, like you, had to like go start unearthing all of this information. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And now I'm trying to fix it. You know, I fixed it for myself and now I'm trying to fix it for my patients. But these, I know what current obstetricians and gynecologists are being the information they're being taught. And so that's what's frustrating when, you know, people come to me online and they're like, well, my doctor says this. And I'm like, yeah, I know they do. Like, you only know if you know. Yeah.
They don't know.
It's crazy. It's crazy. So, okay. So, give us like, tell people the most basic definition you can of like methylation, because basically all these decisions that the mom's making in her pregnancy are affecting methylation of her baby's DNA, right?
Well, it's affecting her neurotransmitter turnover. It's affecting her ability to make glutathione. I call methyl group the coin for the slot machine of everything your body does. So there's probably 250 biological equations or chemical reactions that you use a methyl donor for. So I tell women, okay, think of it like your Gucci logo on your belt or your Chanel belt. It's like the coin for the slot machine that allows you to mark your DNA for how you're going to use it. It's the coin for the slot machine that allows you to clean yourself of toxins. It's the coin for the slot machine of how you're going to make your energy. It's the coin for the slot machine of how you're going to make your dopamine and your serotonin that's going to make you calm and happy. It's so powerful that if you take too much at once and you're really inflamed, you're going to make yourself feel horrible. Some people call that overmethylation. I don't. I think if you do the work on inflammation first, then you can come and add the methylation. That's why I really encourage people to do it before they conceive. But it's the coin for the slot machine of all of your chemical reactions, just like the sun is the coin for the slot machine for all of your physics reactions. So I think people have, just a simple way to think of it is it's the driver of all of those cleaning yourself, making your energy, making your brain work, and making your DNA turnover.
Yeah. I totally agree. Incredible. Okay. So then, the mom does everything, has the baby, and, now she's breastfeeding. What signals are we sending that baby through breast milk?
Well, the most interesting ones to me, we're sending our food, we're sending fat, but we're also sending modulating factors to lower that baby's inflammation. Mm-hmm. So there's actually sensors in the breasts. Let me back up. We know when rugby players, there's studies out of Europe that when rugby players get a concussion, they can do a cheek swab on the field to check for cytokines to that are instantly released into the saliva of that rugby player to tell if he has a concussion. So we know that the brain is already sending signals into the spit of the rugby player to say, I have a concussion. Mom's breast has receptors to pick up those cytokines and tell her brain to increase her production of endocannabinoids and palmitoylethanolamide, which are in the placenta, or in the amniotic fluid, to downregulate that baby's neuroinflammation when it starts toddling around and bumps its head. We don't tell moms that. So basically, every time your baby has a traumatic brain injury, like a rugby player, you're supposed to breastfeed and push things out through the milk, fatty acids, basically fat, mm-hmm. to turn off the inflammation in the child's brain. But we don't tell moms that. And there's no way that can happen from a packaged synthetic food that you're giving your baby, a formula. There's no way you get that dynamic. So to me, that's one of the most important things, is making sure that moms understand you're in an equilibrium with your baby. Your baby gets in trouble, you send out signals to help it. And if you're not breastfeeding, you're not sending out signals to help it. And that help should be a high fat content for brain repair. And also, you know, the colostrum and the palmitoylethanolamide and the endocannabinoids will help the gut. They lower inflammation in general. Mm-hmm. People aren't even aware that dynamic goes on.
Yeah. It's incredible. When I go on other people's podcasts and talk about, you know, women produce ketones in the third trimester very regularly, even women who eat carbs produce a lot of ketones, and cord blood studies have shown that there's a massive amount of ketones even being produced itself by the baby. And then breastfed babies, despite the carb content of breast milk, you know, have ketosis, and it's very important for myelination of the brain. And then they become toddlers and start eating goldfish crackers.
Or the parents put them on a vegan diet, which in my opinion, yeah. is child abuse. I mean, there's no other way to put that. That's child abuse. Your baby has to form the myelin around the brain. And to think that giving it a diet of fruits and vegetables, which let's be honest, when you try to put your child on a vegan diet, it turns out to be more goldfish and yep. sugary things or juice. In my opinion, that's just child abuse. You yeah. are significantly preventing your child from having the growth and development of its brain that it needs. Couldn't and there are countries that have tried to make that illegal. Not right. here, but there are European countries that have tried to make it illegal.
Yeah, we've definitely seen some headlines about it in the last couple of years. Okay, so talk to us about the role of sunlight. People are sunlight deficient in this country.
So the sun is a symphony. The sun gives us electromagnetic radiation from radio waves to gamma rays and cosmic rays. We only see a tiny, 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 tiny portion in the middle of that light. It's all light. We just can't see it. But that light is what gives us the instructions for everything that I said, the food, the oxygen, the plants, and the code, so that we know if we need to get up in the morning, if we should make cortisol, if we should make our testosterone, if we should turn off testosterone production, if we should make dopamine, if we should make serotonin or convert serotonin to melatonin, like all of these things. The sunlight will heal leprosy. The sunlight will heal tuberculosis. The sunlight will heal T-cell lymphoma. The sunlight will heal damaged eyes. Like the studies just keep pouring in on every single thing that the sunlight does. The king of that mountain is in the ultraviolet window. When ultraviolet A light comes out and relaxes our blood vessels, makes us vasodilate, lowers our blood pressure, chills us out. And then ultraviolet B light comes out and we convert the dreaded cholesterol that everyone's so afraid of into vitamin D, which is our main hormone that controls our immune function and our mood. So this, it's not just about vitamin D. It's a symphony. It's a crescendo and decrescendo of electromagnetic radiation, which is particles called photons, that are supposed to instruct us through our eye and our skin what to do every day from a subconscious or automatic or autonomic perspective to keep ourselves healthy. It is a full book of light or instruction or code to keep us healthy. And one of the probably just starting with the most devastating thing was 100 years ago when they realized, oh, well, you can supplement vitamin D from a plant. And then you can just give it to people. And they stopped telling people 100 years ago when there were two Nobel Prizes in the early 1900s, well, stop going in the sun and just take the pill. And then they saw toxicity from the pill and they attributed the toxicity from the pill because they were massively, stuffing everything with vitamin D like they did with folic acid. And instead of recognizing that the toxicity from the pill of vitamin D was from, a genetic mutation that some of those kids had, they blamed it on the vitamin D, and that has crossed over into all of our educations as doctors. So we believe that a vitamin D level over 100 is going to be dangerous. And most of that came from the wrong information in the 1930s, but pediatricians just propagated it. So the light is everything. Mm-hmm. It's not a little bit, and it's not just vitamin D. It is everything.
Yeah. I just had another, Matt Maruca just came on, and we had a whole podcast on light and light spectrum and, blue light blocking glasses and all sorts of fun stuff like that. But obviously with the industrialization of our world, you know, I'm inside a house right now on this cool thing called a computer, and we wear clothing. And of course we're just told like sunlight's bad. It's going to cause, you know, skin cancer, and people are slathering all of these chemical laden sunscreens. But how much sunlight do people need if they're going to prioritize this as something to improve their health? Like how much sunlight do they really need?
Enough to get their vitamin D high by the end of the summer with light. So we've modernized it so much. We have an app where you can calculate that. It's dependent upon the color of your skin and how much sunshade you make. So the darker you are, the more you need, because you were biologically supposed to be closer to the sun. And the lighter you are, the less you may need, but you still need a lot. And that's the hardest thing, I think, to teach people how much sun they need, because they think if they go outside in something like I'm wearing right now, they got enough sunshine. Well, thousands of years ago, you would have been pretty much naked. You wouldn't have had on a sleeveless sweater and shorts. So it's an eye-opener for a lot of the men and women that I see, that they think they work so hard all summer long to raise their vitamin D naturally. And I want to come back to lowering inflammation first. And then at the end of the summer, they have a vitamin D level of like 35 and they're still frustrated. So what I always tell people is, are you being a sundial? Are you walking around straight up, or are you in a relaxed or reclined position where more of your skin can be exposed?
Mm-hmm.
Because the first summer people try to do this, they don't hit their mark and they're really upset. And then when their lab value comes back in August as a low number, they're frustrated and they say it doesn't work. And then you really have to assess, okay, was I hiking a mountain with a hat on and a tank top and shorts on, or was I truly naked spending the whole day? Before you do any of that though, you have to hydrate and make sure you have enough fat, make sure you have enough DHA, make sure you've lowered your inflammation. I always tell people, make sure your A1C is, your hemoglobin A1C is low, make sure your C-reactive protein is low. Like, you don't want to go out there with a bunch of inflammation in your skin and then shine ultraviolet radiation on it and cause damage. Another way to say that is everything in the human body has to maintain homeostasis. You want to be in the middle, in the Goldilocks zone. Right? So if your estrogen's too high, you feel bloated and puffy. If your estrogen's too low, you're dry and you have an itchy vagina and your skin ages. You have to have that medium amount of estrogen. The sun is the same way, not enough. And you have a sunshine vitamin D deficiency and all hell breaks loose with your immune system, but too much causes DNA strand breaks that then can cause skin cancer. So the key factors are lowering your inflammation, making sure you're eliminating the carbs from your diet first, so that you're less likely to burn when you do it.
Yeah. My husband and I have been basically ketogenic since 2016. And we noticed, I'm darker skinned and he's very light skinned. And we noticed that he didn't burn like at all. And it took us like a summer or two. And I'm like, okay, this is crazy. Like, you're not using sunscreen. He was just like not burning. And then I rarely burned ever. And so that wasn't like a new thing for me. But then we get into the social media world and everyone's saying it. They're like, I experienced the exact same thing. And then, you know, you look at some of the work by people with, you know, inflammatory seed oils and things like that, removing those, people don't burn. I'm totally with you, driving down the inflammation. It's incredible the difference that it makes. So you're saying, if you're metabolically unhealthy, tackle that first before you're trying to get outside and bake yourself into your vitamin D up.
Yeah. So if I'm dealing with someone who's really sick, who's used to a standard American diet, I tell them you have to get rid of the hamburgers. You have to get rid of the fries or the hamburgers with buns. You have to get rid of the beer. You have to get rid of the wine. You have to get rid of the things that are making you inflame, that are making you your reactive oxygen species before you start laying out. Because that's the damage that every dermatologist and plastic surgeon is afraid of. And the more carbs, which fruits and vegetables are carbs, but also pasta, rice, quinoa, treats, all of that stuff, the more carbs you have, the more likely you are to have a tighter window of how much sun you can tolerate. Because the sun is ionizing radiation. Ultraviolet light is ionizing radiation, which means it creates ions that cause free radical damage that can cause DNA strand breaks. And when you get DNA strand breaks, you lose control of your oncogenes and your tumor suppressors and you get skin cancer. And then you have, I think a lot of heavy metal excretion or secretion in our skin is discounted. So one of the main ways we get rid of heavy metals is through our skin, but we don't talk about it. In our textbooks, we kind of write it off. And one of the main ways we take in heavy metals is through kale and spinach. And the kale and spinach's job is to clean the heavy metals out of the earth. So when we take those things in, we cause damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then we shine light on it, ionizing light. So when you understand we evolved to do this, hunting, fasting, refeeding, naked in the sun, it's only the past couple hundred years that we have completely messed all of that up. That's a big aha moment for people. And it's going to take people like you and me working really, really hard for the next 10, 20, 30 years. Hopefully it's faster with social media, because I think social media is a way to bypass the people who don't understand.
Right. Yeah.
To get the word out.
A little bit of a side story, but when you were talking about the spinach and kale, I had a gal, because you were talking about lichen sclerosis, who had this vulvar condition, skin condition, super itchy, super painful. And when I did her dietary recall every single morning, she was having a big handful of spinach with almond milk in this kind of breakfast smoothie. And I said, okay, we're going to eliminate that. I want you to either fast or just have some eggs. She looked at me crazy. I said, just do it for me. 10 days later, she came. Her vulva was completely clear. She's like, what? She's like, what? That's all it took. It was mind blowing. But okay. So back to the sunlight though, for people who like me live in Nebraska at a latitude where we get a lot of sunlight exposure in the wintertime and it's frigidly cold outside, how do you feel about like UV light boxes or even tanning beds if they are inflammation down, metabolically healthy?
I mean, I hesitate to talk about that because just like with putting moms who don't know what they're doing in ketosis, they can cause harm if they get dehydrated and electrolyte deficient and pass out and things can happen. But I have my Spurdy right behind me and I live in Arizona. I will say this, there is a medical grade tanning bed company that you can pay thousands of dollars to a dermatologist to go get specific frequencies of light or electromagnetic radiation that should be coming from the sun. But instead you can pay dermatologists to go stand in a tanning bed, a medical tanning bed, to heal yourself of all these conditions that we're talking about. Why would you pay someone when you can get that light in the summer? Now, if it's winter and you failed to do it, you failed to have the time off of work, you might want to use it. And you have to, but this, the protective issue is if you go lay in a tanning bed in December, the ultraviolet index in a tanning bed is somewhere between 13 and 15. And your ultraviolet index in Nebraska is 1. Mm-hmm. So it's like being the naked girl from Omaha who decides to go lay on the beach in Costa Rica. You're going to burn, even as dark as you are. If you went and laid all day long in Costa Rica at a UV index of 15, you're going to burn. Mm-hmm. So if you recognize that and you understand what you're doing and you eliminate the inflammation first and you realize you have to go slow, I don't have a problem with it. I think it's great. And for most of my histamine people, that is what I will privately do with them. I mean, if we have light boxes that you can buy that are $2,500 or $3,500, or you can go to a dermatologist to pay for these things. And I don't know what they charge these days, but I'm sure it's a few hundred dollars a session. You can figure it out yourself. That, and the tragedy is when we have doctors who try to teach people this and they have, you know, their license threatened because we're not supposed to talk about it, or they have their financial, their finances threatened because they talk about it. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. It's a crazy world. I just shared this opinion piece the other day on my social media about how evidence-based medicine is so tainted. And I was like, I was waiting for like the censorship, like flags to start falling or something like that. But it's incredible, you know, with my background in nutrition, like how much of, you know, the studies are funded by like 10 of the largest food companies. Like there's essentially 10 companies that own our processed food supply.
And our supplements, and the supplements too.
Yeah. Somebody in that exact post actually was like, oh, I won't say the name, but did you know so-and-so, like a very, very, very well-known supplement company that a lot of functional integrative providers use is owned by a very sketchy food company. So yeah, it's
even some of the functional doctors.
Yeah.
It goes deep.
It goes super deep. Okay. So these days, autophagy is like a buzzword. Everybody's talking about autophagy, which literally means eating oneself, clearing out all the dead and damaged cells. What are ways that we can stimulate autophagy?
Well, the main controllers are leptin, or one of the main controllers is leptin. So that's your fat signaling hormone. So the first thing I tell people is you have to fix your sleep because you do most of that work at night. And when you don't get sleep, you don't send those signals. And you have to eliminate carbohydrates to fix your leptin signaling, insulin signaling. So when your body gets used to seeing so much sugar, 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 and again, fruits and vegetables are sugars. So that's a really hard hurdle, I think, for people to get over. They are carbohydrates. The mitochondria read fruits and vegetables as carbohydrates. if you start to lower your carb content, you're going to start to clean yourself. Fasting, entering, I call it using ketosis to blow open the church of autophagy is my phrase for it. Like you practice ketosis until you're good at it. And then when your leptin normalizes, your insulin normalizes, your blood sugar normalizes, and then you get used to burning ketones instead of sugar, your body's going to be used to running with a very low glucose. You don't call that hypoglycemia anymore because you're running on ketones. Really the only thing that needs that glucose is your blood cells. Once you're good at that, then you can start putting your toe into the sea of fasting and seeing how long you can push it. And the longer you push it, the more self-cleaning you do. So it all boils down to how did they do it in mice and how did they do it in yeast? Those are what most of the studies are in. And in yeast, they had to starve them of nitrogen until they were almost dead. And in mice, the same thing. They had to starve them until they lost about 20% of their mass. And obviously you're not going to starve a human. It would take a month to starve a human to that point, but you can do it repetitively.
How often do you think people should do extended fasting? That's a question I get a lot. You know, some people are intermittent fasting, eating in these, you know, 16-8 regimens or things like that. But then some people are doing 24, 48, 72 hour or longer fasts. Like, how often do you think somebody really needs to do something like that?
So my answer to those people is if someone thinks that they can tell you without knowing you how long to fast, they're lying to you. Because if I don't know your sleep pattern, if I don't know how much fat you have, if I don't know how much muscle you have, if I don't know your insulin, if I don't know your leptin, if I don't know your vitamin D, if I don't know what you're actually eating, I can't tell you that you're getting a fast long enough to pull the trigger. There's no way. So for me to just blanket tell you 18-6 or 24 or 36, and you've got a 1 centimeter mass in your breast that nobody knows about yet, I'm not telling you the truth. You have to know yourself. And if I said, okay, you have a breast cancer that's a centimeter and you're 250 pounds, let's go fast you for 5 days, which is probably what it would take over and over and over and over and over, you're going to feel horrible. That's why I think the fasting experts have so much trouble. The fasting experts are out there screaming, we need to teach people to fast. And people in you're in my position, not with the knowledge that we have, but are just practicing general gynecology, are saying, I can't ask some 250-pound woman with breast cancer to fast, to just go home and fast for 5 days. She'll be a crazy mess. Every family member will run away from her crazy behavior if she could even do it. So there's a disconnect. The poor fasting researchers are butting up against the primary care doctors saying, I can't tell people to fast. The board's going to take away my license if I tell people to fast for 5 days. The people aren't going to do it. They want something to eat, and then they're going to go cheat and splurge on a bunch of sugar and make it worse. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take an entire population to understand we evolved this way. This is how we're supposed to be. This is what Judaism, Christianity, Islam, I'm doing a fast for Ramadan with people on a private Instagram page right now, not to teach them about the religion, although we will talk about some of that, but to teach them, look, it's here too. So I think that's why some of the fasting experts, they're really having a trouble conveying to the general population how much they have to do. And if you try to jump in with both feet and your body has never burned fat for fuel, it's going to be too hard and people will give up. They're going to give up when there's a Dunkin' Donuts on every street corner. The hunger is going to be too great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So another way that we can simulate autophagy is like with exercise.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about, you know, exercise versus like cardio versus resistance training? Like where
high intensity interval exercise. Well, you want to release stem cells, right? You've cleaned yourself. The joy is not in cleaning yourself. The joy is the stem cell release so you can make yourself new again. So I heard some guys talking about the longevity escape velocity. And before we finish, I want to talk about physics a little bit. When they talk about longevity escape velocity, these biohackers,
yeah,
they're using a physics term to escape the singularity. Okay. So the escape velocity, I was talking about this live this morning, to get off of Earth, you have to hit a certain speed to launch a rocket off of Earth. If not, gravity is going to take over. The escape velocity to get yourself out of a black hole is the speed of light. That's why it's black. It's not really black. Inside of a black hole, all of the light exists. All of the light that falls in gets trapped, and it just keeps reverberating inside of that black hole like a disco ball, but with the mirrors on the disco ball facing in. So inside of a black hole is all of the light. All of the light of the electromagnetic spectrum, not just the 0.0035% that we see, but the whole thing falls in and it gets trapped. So they're taking a term from physics and applying it to human health. So they're calling it the longevity escape velocity because they want to find the place where we can reverse age ourselves faster than we age ourselves. So in a human, my mind says, okay, that typically happens around 25, around 20 to 25, you stop growing, your bones have closed, you're not myelinating your brain. You're not doing all of those things anymore. You need to back off. It's kind of like the basketball player who stops, you know, playing basketball all day. And then all of a sudden everybody forgot to tell him that he can't have donuts because he's not burning it off. And all of a sudden he gets really sick and then he gets the autoimmune disease and then he can't sleep. All that happens. So they're looking for that point. They're calling it longevity escape velocity. What they're really saying is, where do we get to the point where we can use all the tricks of the zygote or the embryo or the fetus to reverse age ourselves? So while the whole 8 billion of us are walking around going to Dunkin' Donuts and getting tacos at Safeway and whatever we're eating, these people are talking about, okay, how do I trick myself? And the things that they're looking at are DNA, the DNA, the methylation clock, telomere length. I mean, they have certain targets that they're after, and all autophagy, all apoptosis, all of those targets are triggered by ketosis and fasting and high intensity exercise. So the high intensity interval exercise is how you release the stem cells to repair yourself.
How often does one need to do something like that?
Every day.
Yeah. How long do you think? I mean, true HIIT. Like people think they're like, patients come in, they're like, oh yeah, I'm doing HIIT. I do this like hour long class at my set. I'm like, no, you didn't do HIIT for an hour. Trust me.
I mean, I hike straight up and down a mountain every day. So yeah. I do a lot, hours and hours and hours, but my Hashimoto's is gone. My thyroid antibodies are normal. My hair came back. I lost 30 pounds. My cognition is all hours.
Yeah.
And when I can't do HIIT, then I keep going with jogging or walking. So I do as much as I possibly can. And people will come in my live and say, you're not possibly doing that much HIIT. And I'm like, well, I've been live streaming the whole time and I show you my heart rate goes up to 150 or 160 and then I let it come back down. So it's not like I'm surprised when people say you're not possibly doing that much, because I teach live for free for 2 to 3 hours a day while I'm doing it. And I show people what my watch says my heart rate is. Yeah. But that took years to be able to do that much exercise. It wasn't like I just walked out my back door and started doing it yesterday.
Yes, I'm very jealous of your morning hikes. I won't lie. Got no mountains here in Nebraska.
Created that reality though. I'll tell you a funny story. I went to my first medical school interview. I was at Loyola and I went to my first medical school interview at the University of Illinois in my suit and my penny loafers. And I was all excited. I did the interview. It seemed like a mile back to the parking garage, and I didn't have money to get out. I was a poor medical student. I didn't have a credit card. I didn't have anything to pay to get out. And I was the only one. So I had to walk all the way back in a blizzard to get someone to let me out of this parking garage. And then the next day I went and interviewed at UCLA in 70 degrees. And I was like, okay, I'm going back to the sunshine. I can't take this. I'm out of Chicago.
Incredible. Okay. We just have a little bit of time left. Dr. Hunt, is there anything else that you want people to know?
Yeah, I really would like people to read Your Spark is Light, because more than all of the biology and the ketosis and the fasting that we just talked about, that is when we are closest to the quantum field. So in a singularity, when subatomic particles hit, they create quantum gravity, and the quantum gravity is what is the beginning of our consciousness being attached to that zygote that is then going to grow into a baby and be born and develop all of its psychology and all of everything that it is, good or bad or otherwise. That is the moment when we see that spark, that is the moment that what we call qubits now in science, that are you, come from the quantum field. Religions call it heaven. And we didn't spend a lot of time discussing that, but I want people to realize that we can see it. We have evidence that it's there. We have evidence that some massive energy transfer from somewhere has happened. And the only explanation is that it has to be the quantum gravity of that sperm and egg, their merger, opening a microscopic black hole to bring the information that is your soul or your consciousness or the beginning of your code into a new body. And think if people realize that we all come from the same place at the same moment at fertilization, and they clean their brains enough, then to be healthy, we could solve a lot of humanity's problems, because we are at the brink of handing the baton to artificial intelligence. We are creating a super intelligent body, and we can't even fathom, most people can't even fathom what is coming and what it already knows about us because of our data mining that happens. And we didn't get into a lot of those topics, but every religion tells us that this is what happened. And we now have all of the science between LIGO and CERN and the James Webb telescope, all of the science to prove everything that Einstein told us, everything that Da Vinci told us, everything that ancient cultures told us. We now have figured out the science that we can see every step of the quarks, the protons, the neutrons, the electrons, all of that. And that is the moment that it happens. So I hope that everybody downloads that book and reads it. It's free. I don't charge for it. You can just take it, read it, reread it, clean your brain some more, reread it so that you can understand not just the biology of how to get yourself there. Everything we talked about today is the part to get yourself to be connected enough to understand it, but then you understand the physics of it, because we are in a situation where humans are controlling CRISPR, changing our genetics in embryos. We are playing God with a lot of things, and that is the most sacred time in a human life. I think we all should be aware of what it is before we start playing God with that moment.
Yeah, I was just listening to a Tony Robbins interview the other day talking about CRISPR technology and gene editing with chronic diseases. And it's crazy to think, you know, where things will be in even just 5 years. It's incredible. So tell people how to find you on social media and how to download this book, because it is such an important thing, I think, for people to go find.
You can find me at CourtneyHuntMD.com. I work with people remotely at GeneticProtocol.com with NutriGenetics and Mitochondria and Light. But more importantly, the book is at CourtneyHuntMD. It's a free download. It's also on Amazon if you want a paperback, but it's free on my website. And my Instagram account where I teach all this live for free every day is CourtneyHuntMD.
Incredible. Dr. Hunt, thank you for your time. We appreciate it so much. And this was so enlightening for me because, like I said, we are so like-minded on many of these topics. And I know you're doing incredible work out there for so many different people and really making a big impact more than people probably realize. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you share this episode, download it, leave us your reviews, go follow Dr. Hunt. Download her book, Spark is Light, and have a fabulous day.